Support comes from the St. Louis Chamber Chorus. Season 68 concludes at John Burroughs at 3 p.m. on May 26th with the United Nations commissioned Voices of Today by composer Benjamin Britten, featuring youth and adult singers. Tickets at chamberchorus.org.
From St. Louis Public Radio. This is St. Louis on the Air.
And I think that the Pentagon wanted to preserve the deception capability in case they wanted to use it in a future war.
Now, who came up with this idea of let's have some fake troops with inflatable tanks?
Well, deceptions in the military, of course, is very old. It goes back to the Trojan horse.
I'm Sarah Fenske. In Missouri, June 6th is Ghost Army Recognition Day. That comes thanks to a bill signed into law last year by Governor Mike Parson. And the federal government seems poised to follow Missouri's lead. Earlier this month, the U.S. House of Representatives voted overwhelmingly in favor of H.R. 707, a bill to award the soldiers serving in the Ghost Army with the Congressional Gold Medal. So who exactly were these soldiers? Rick Byers' 2013 documentary, The Ghost Army, remains the definitive guide to this fascinating World War II tale of subterfuge and strategy. Here's how the film described a pivotal campaign in March of 1945 as the Allies prepared to cross the Rhine into the heart of Germany.
Across the river from Dusseldorf, the view from the air reveals hundreds of American vehicles. Intercepted Allied radio transmissions confirm the presence of two American divisions. German observation posts hear them moving in across the river. All signs suggest the attack will come here. But the tanks spotted from the air are 93-pound inflatable dummies. The sounds come from loudspeakers. The radio transmissions from a script.
It's amazing the fakery that we were able to perpetrate upon the enemy.
And that is from the 2013 documentary, The Ghost Army, now on Amazon Prime. And joining us now to share more of this history and why lawmakers are finally ready to honor these men is Rick Beyer. He is the director of The Ghost Army, which premiered on PBS in 2013. He is also the president of the Ghost Army Legacy Project. Rick, welcome.
Oh, thanks. Great to be here.
Rick, for those who haven't seen your wonderful film, what exactly was The Ghost Army?
Well, it's a unit of men. Its official name was the 23rd Headquarters Special Troops, which is a really boring name for an amazing unit. They were a deception unit. Their mission was to impersonate other much larger American units, to fool the Germans about the size, the location, and the actions of those units. And they carried out 22 deceptions on the battlefield, starting in June 1944 and going to March 1945.
So it's such an amazing idea. Who came up with this idea of let's have some fake troops with inflatable tanks?
Well, deceptions in the military, of course, is very old. It goes back to the Trojan horse. This particular idea was developed by two staff officers working in the Special Plans Branch for the U.S. Army in London in 1944. And interestingly, they were kind of opposites. One was a former civilian, Ralph Ingersoll, who'd been an author and a publisher. The other was a West Point career Army guy named Billy Harris. Two really different people, but working together, they developed kind of this crazy idea for a traveling roadshow or of deception, or a symphony of subterfuge, as one writer called it.
So you said they had 22 different deceptions. Did they pull off most of them?
Yes, their deceptions were mostly successful, and none of them were they found out by the Germans. And in some of them, we have really good evidence that they managed to fool the Germans and get them to move troops and kind of do the things that we hoped they would do that might help us save lives and help bring about American victory.
So what was the ultimate impact of this? I mean, can we point to, how many lives they saved?
You know, that's so tricky. I talk about that a lot. There have been estimates that they saved 15,000, 25,000 lives. But how do you know? You don't really know exactly. I have talked to soldiers, GIs who served in Europe who said, well, you know, maybe they saved my life because, you know, they were involved in an operation I was involved in. And that's very moving and meaningful. It's hard to know their exact impact, except I would say there's this one Army analysis of the unit done about 30 years later in which the author says, rarely have there been so few men who had such a great impact on a major military campaign.
Well, speaking of those men, this is a perfect time to introduce our second guest today, and that is Carolyn Spence Cagle. She lives in Lampy, Missouri. She's a board member of the Ghost Army Legacy Project, and her late father was one of the men who served in the Ghost Army. Carolyn, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for reaching out to allow Rick and I to have this dialogue about the meritorious work of the Ghost Army and also promoting the Congressional Gold Medal for the Ghost Army that, as you addressed earlier, is in the U.S. Senate at the present time.
That's right. And I want to talk about some of the attempts to honor these men here in just a few moments. But first, I just want to talk a little bit about your dad. Tell us a bit about his life before World War II. Who was he when the Army said, hey, come be a part of this very, very strange experiment here?
Well, my understanding from conversations with my family is that my dad was enrolled as a freshman at a small university in the northwestern part of Pennsylvania. And recruiters came into his art class because he had always been an artist very early in his life and then continued that throughout his career. But these recruiters came in and asked for anybody, pardon me, allergies are giving me crazy stuff today, and asked for people to go ahead and sign up for this wonderful participation in World War II. And so my dad, along with many others, marched up to New York, and my dad, from what I understand, was recruited, and he actually went to the City College of New York and underwent some significant training in different technology spheres, and eventually was recruited for the Ghost Army, although he really didn't know anything about what he was doing. You know, he basically just said, okay, you guys want me, I'm ready to go, and this will work out for everybody. So, yeah.
And there were 20 men from Missouri who were also part of this troop. But, Rick, it sounds like more typical were people like Carolyn's dad. These were art school students, and a lot of them seemed to have come from the East Coast.
Well, there's about half of the visual deception unit were art students or artists of some kind. That's about 150 people out of the 1,100 who served in the unit. So there's plenty of other different people from all sorts of walks of life. Interestingly, there's another Ghost Army veteran who was an artist in St. Louis who's worth mentioning, Ed Baccia, who was 30 years at Wash U and also a very well-known artist and art professor. So the artists definitely were a big part of the story, but they're not the only part of the story.
So there's another clip from Rick's film I want to play here. This is a member of the Ghost Army who describes how he was recruited for this work.
Lieutenant Bob Conrad, a signal officer for the Dixie Division, was another who found himself suddenly transferred to a mysterious new unit.
I had no idea of why I was there or what I was to be doing. After I was there for a few days, I spoke to this major and I said, what is this organization? And he said, let's put it this way, Lieutenant. If we are totally successful, you may not come back.
And that, again, is from the documentary The Ghost Army. Carolyn, I understand it took decades before you learned about your father's service. But what do you know now about what he did as he was there in Europe in 1944, 1945?
Well, there were four different units or components of the Ghost Army. My dad was a member of the 603, which really focused on the deception, creating fake signs, posts, you know, where the commanders would hang out, really retooling jeeps and different transport vehicles with different signs to indicate that they were something other than what they were, creating fake shoulder patches so they might look like Germans or other people. They really just engaged in their artistry and their innovation to create deceptive messages that would really circulate around the communities where they were and also distract the Germans from really understanding what was happening. So it was quite, they were very, very busy, but they had lots of fun. They sketched a lot when they were in Europe, and that was kind of a relief, I think, for them, therapy, if you will.
To get to do these illustrations.
Yes, yeah.
Because Sarah, can
really
I jump
in? To pick up, you know, in a short period of time, go to a certain place and create the deception, and then they might be there for a couple of days, and then they were asked to move somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So they, yeah.
Rick, I'd love for you to jump in there.
Yeah, sorry. So I met Carolyn's dad, Joe Spence, because he's in the documentary film also. And he worked in the 603rd, as she said, which also handled these inflatables, the inflatable tanks and artillery and everything they used to fool German aerial reconnaissance. And he told a great story. He was essentially a replacement. He was coming in kind of late in the process, and he couldn't believe, when he went down, he was given an order to go down and come into where they were training. And when he saw four guys holding a tank up in the air, he said to himself, "What the heck kind of unit have I found myself in?" So it's a story that has a lot of whimsical aspects, but as we approach Memorial Day, it's also worth mentioning that, four soldiers died, carrying out these missions. So it's a business that's funny at times, but it's a very serious business as well.
For sure. I mean, this could have been so dangerous. Carolyn, he came home after the war. He did become an art teacher, eventually earned his doctorate in education. Did he talk about the details of his service when you were a child?
No. Now, my father was pretty much, he was a straight and narrow guy for the most part, and he was told when he left the Ghost Army that he was to not utter a breath or any words about what he did in the war. So he followed that directive.
And Rick, your film gets into the reasons for this. Why was it so important that they kept this quiet even after the fact?
Well, if you can perform a magic trick and then you tell people how you did the trick, nobody's going to believe that trick the next time it's performed. And I think that the Pentagon wanted to preserve the deception capability in case they wanted to use it in a future war. And in 1945, that thinking probably was, well, we might go to war with Russia at some point, and we want to preserve the details of the deception capability. It's okay if a little bit of it gets out or if there's a news story about inflatable tanks, but we want to keep secret the way we actually put this together and intertwined these various kinds of deception, visual, radio, sonic, and impersonation to fool the enemy. So I think it was to preserve that capability.
We're talking today to Rick Beyer. He is the director of the Ghost Army documentary. You can watch that now on Amazon Prime if this piques your interest. We're also talking today to Carolyn Spence Cagle. Her father served in the Ghost Army, and she's a board member of the Ghost Army Legacy Project. We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
And now back to our conversation. Today we're talking about the Ghost Army. It specialized in deception in the European theater during the final year of World War II. My guests today are Rick Beyer, the director of the Ghost Army documentary, and also president of the Ghost Army Legacy Project, and also Carolyn Spence Cagle. She lives in Lampe, Missouri. Her father served in the Ghost Army in World War II, and she is now a board member of the Ghost Army Legacy Project. So, Carolyn, you mentioned that your father had followed the rules. He didn't talk about this when you were a kid. In 1996, the Army finally declassified the details of the Ghost Army's service. Did your dad open up at that point?
Yes. I remember that my father, when he was allowed to really talk about his experience during World War II, went into his study where there was a bureau, and he got out these medals that he had received from the French government for his service. And, you know, his eyes were wet, and, you know, all of us were very impressed, with, you know, to think our dad was actually doing something that merited governmental, you know, gratitude was just phenomenal. So anyway, that was sort of the conversation, really, with how did he get to the Ghost Army, and what did he do when he was there, and, you know, he would often talk about working in the displaced person sector after the operations were pretty much complete for the Ghost Army, and how difficult that was dealing with all the different nationalities were so angry at each other because of the war. So, yeah, we found out. And then the other thing is that Rick Beyer, along with the, you know, he does a tour through a company in New Orleans, and we went, my husband and I went on a tour, and so I ended up having more conversations with my mother, and she dug out information too that I was not privy to earlier in my dad's life before he passed away.
So wonderful.
I'm learning as we go about all kinds of different things.
Rick, do you think it was a relief for these veterans to finally be able to share the truth about what they'd done?
I do think it was. You know, sometimes you get people who don't want to open up about their experiences in World War II. And I found the exact opposite when I started working to interview veterans, that they were dying to talk about it. And appreciative that that they were recognized, it was recognized as something good. One of the veterans, Bernie Mason, he said, well, he said, he said, even if I could have talked about it, he said, I think I would have been embarrassed about it. I said, well, why, Bernie? Why would you be embarrassed? And he said, because, well, you know, I don't have a real war story. You know, we're doing something with inflatable tanks or impersonation or this or that. So I think they appreciated the chance to talk about it, and also the idea that the totality of what they did, trying to deceive the Germans to save lives and bring about victory, is something that is being recognized and honored.
And that's actually a great segue into something that we do want to talk about today, and that is the honors that are now beginning to finally come after so many years. Missouri designated Ghost Army Recognition Day last year. Carolyn, did that seem like a major win for the Ghost Army Legacy Project?
Oh, yes, most definitely. Gene Dorman, who was a Missouri legislator several years ago, really was the one that kind of accompanied that bill to the legislative process, and he's still kind of active with our group that's planning the event on June 6th. I went down to Jeff City, or actually up to Jeff City, I guess I should say, with my husband last July to be part of the signing by Governor Parson. So, yeah, it was a nice thing. We had really worked hard for that in the state of Missouri because we wanted to be equivalent to what they had done in the state of Arizona, where they had supported Ghost Army projects and that kind of thing.
Rick, have others joined Arizona and Missouri at this point?
We don't have other states that have joined at this point, but the, you know, our main focus is on Congress, as you alluded to, and the Ghost Army bill, of course, passed in the House of Representatives last Tuesday, which was just an amazing and fantastic moment. And now, you know, that bill to award the unit a Congressional Gold Medal is before the U.S. Senate. And that bill is S-1404. And our big push right now is to get more senators to co-sponsor it. So we have, I think, 18 senators so far. I will say there are none from Missouri yet.
Oh.
And we're hoping to change that with Ghost Army Recognition Day and all the stuff going on. And, you know, we have to get because of the Senate rules, we have to get to 67. So you literally have to have 2/3 of the Senate say we're behind this before they can even consider it. So that's what we're pushing for right now.
Well, I hope Josh Hawley and Roy Blunt are listening. Rick, I have to ask, the bill that passed Tuesday, I understand this was first introduced in 2015. This feels like a no-brainer to me. How did it take 6 years to get to this point?
I don't know that we have enough time to answer that question.
But, that's fair. But there have been some struggles.
Well, I think that with any bill like this, everybody wants to check it out very carefully. They don't want to honor a unit wrongly. And then you need to put it on people's radar screen. You need to get it up to the top of the pile. And so that is really what requires the effort. I think once people know about it and once they understand what they did, they're amazed and blown away and usually want to get involved and help. But it's getting to that point for each individual legislator that takes the time.
So, Carolyn, this effort could well yield congressional gold medals for the men who served in this. Your father has passed away. He won't be here to see that. Does that feel kind of bittersweet?
Well, to some extent, yes. But to actually get into the point where the congressional gold medal was issued, is a significant event. And Rick's right on board with the difficulty of getting previous administrations and senators and representatives to support it, with all the other things that they deal with in Washington. But we've got an incredible group that's working on virtual lobbying right now to really make that a priority for people, in the Senate to really co-sponsor the bill. And I have been emailing Blunt and Hawley, really pestering them, I would say, about their need to really step forward and support, particularly in regards to June 6th celebration here.
And that need to act on this, to not wait another 6 years before the Senate brings passage to this. We should mention there are still members of this unit who are living today. Rick, I imagine that might not be the case for very much longer.
There are only 11 men still left out of more than 1,100 who served in the unit. And the oldest of them is 106, and the youngest is 96. And so the Ghost Army is going to be an army of ghosts in the not-too-distant future. And so it's really important to try to honor them this way now, while some of them are still here to receive that honor.
So you have mentioned these festivities that are happening. We do want to mention that you can see an exhibition on the Ghost Army at the Missouri State Museum. That's there in the Missouri Capitol. That's going to be beginning June 6th. There's also a special screening of Rick's film. If anyone's going to be in Branson on June 6th, that is happening then at the IMAX there. Details are linked on our website. That's stlpr.org. You do need to get reservations for that special event. But we'd encourage people, if you want to get involved in that, those are both great opportunities, and if you feel like putting pressure on Senator Hawley or Senator Blunt, that is Senate Resolution 1404. Is that right, Rick?
Right. 1404.
Okay. So just in our final moment here, Rick, I want to ask this question to you. There's so much that's so interesting in this story. What's the one thing that you're hoping people will take away from the tale of the Ghost Army?
I hope that people take away the idea of using creativity and performance and things like that to save lives, because that's really what this unit is about. Because if you can fool the enemy and get around behind them or kind of go the other way, you can save lives. And doing it, with creativity, that is pretty awesome right on the battlefield. So that's what I'd like people to remember.
Well, Rick Beyer, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And Rick is the president of the Ghost Army Legacy Project, and you can stream the Ghost Army now on Amazon Prime. And Carolyn Spence-Cagle, thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for your father's service.
You're quite welcome. I appreciate it.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here. If you learned something new from today's episode, consider leaving us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the easiest way to help people discover our show. We appreciate it. Thank you. St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news from the St. Louis region and across Missouri. It also includes stories from the Illinois side of the river and our Metro East reporter, Will Bauer.
In Alton, in Belleville, in East St. Louis, in Edwardsville, in Cahokia Heights, at Scott Air Force Base, I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Listen to reports from Will and all of our journalists weekdays on the Gateway, on the STLPR app, and wherever you get podcasts.